Chapter 10. The most luxurious hour of sleep comes not in the beginning or middle, but just prior to awakening. It is then that one dream falls upon another in a kaleidoscope of vivid fantasies. To be interrupted by the ringing of a telephone and thrust back to conscious reality is as tormenting as the scraping of fingernails across a blackboard. Heidi's agony was compounded by an accompanying knock on her hotel room door. Her mind fogged from sleep, she lifted the receiver and mumbled, "Hold on a minute, please." Then she slid from bed and stumbled halfway across the room before realizing she was naked. Grabbing a terry cloth robe from her suitcase, she threw it over her shoulders and cracked the door. A bellhop slipped around the barrier with the ease of an eel and set a large vase of white roses on a table. Still in a haze, Heidi tipped him and returned to the phone. "Sorry for the delay. This is Commander Milligan." "Ah, Commander," came the voice of Jack Murphy, the Senate historian. "Did I wake you?" "I had to get up anyway," she said, disguising the urge to kill tone in her voice. "I thought you'd like to know your request triggered a recollection in my mind. So I ran a search last night after closing time and came up with something most interesting." Heidi rubbed the cobwebs from her eyes. "I'm listening." "There were no photographs on file of a treaty signing during 1914, said Murphy. "I did find, however, an old shot of William Jennings Bryan, who was Wilson's Secretary of State at the time, his Undersecretary, Richard Essex, and Harvey Shields, identified in a caption only as a representative of His Majesty's government, entering a car." "I fail to see a connection," said Heidi. "I'm sorry, I didn't mean to mislead you. The photograph itself tells us very little. But on the back there is a small penciled notation in the lower left corner that is barely legible. It gives the date, May 20th, 1914, and says, 'Bryan leaving White House with North American Treaty.'" Heidi clutched the phone. "So it really existed." "My guess is it was only a proposed treaty." Murphy's pride at successfully meeting a challenge was obvious in his tone. "If you would like a copy of the photograph, we must charge a small fee." "Yes, yes, please. Could you also make an enlargement of the writing on the back?" "No problem. You can pick up the prints any time after 3 o'clock." "That will be terrific. Thank you." Heidi hung up the phone and lay back on the bed, happily basking in the feeling of accomplishment. There was a connection after all. Then she remembered the flowers. A note was attached to one of the white roses. "You look ravishing out of uniform. Forgive me for not being near when you awoke. Dirk." Heidi pressed the rose against her cheek and her lips parted in a lazy smile. The hours spent with Pitt returned as though observed through a pane of frosted glass, the sights and sounds fusing together in a dreamy sort of mist. He was like a phantom who had come and gone in a fantasy. Only the touch of their bodies lingered with clarity, that and a glowing soreness from within. With reluctance, she forced the reverie from her mind and picked up a Washington phone directory from the nightstand. Holding a long fingernail beneath a tiny printed number, she dialed and waited. On the third ring, a voice answered. "Department of State, can I help you?"